And our guest is Lynn Marzulli, the Nephilim. And if we're still being visited by these saucers, these craft, does that mean then that fallen angels are still here among us? That's one of the questions we'll chat with him about when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Lynn, if we were visited by fallen angels, mm-hmm. and we continue to get visited by just the reports of UFOs all mm-hmm. over this planet, mm-hmm. does that mean fallen angels are still visiting us?
Let's look at ufology and some of what certain abductees or alleged abductees talk about. They talk about the grays. They talk about the way they all look exactly alike. They talk about the grays communicating with them telepathically, mm-hmm. but then they talk about a larger figure who often looks very reptilian. Sometimes looks reptilian. It
right.
can also look mantis-like. But some of those descriptions are reptilian. I believe you're looking at two different things. I believe the fallen angels can manifest in this dimension without taking on a shell, hence the reptilian look or the mantis look. They can mm-hmm. shapeshift. One of the ancient scriptures talks about that that fallen angels have the ability to even appear as an angel of light. So it tells me that they can appear as anything that they want to in the trilogy, that actually happens. There's one scene where the kids or the whole family's there, and they see this beautiful angel. I mean, it's just beautiful. And, of course, it shapeshifts into its true form, and it terrifies everybody. Versus the grays, which I believe are demons. There's a difference between a fallen angel and a demon. I believe a demon is a disembodied spirit, and get this, of what was once the Nephilim.
That's interesting.
Okay.
What a theory that is.
A demon is a disembodied spirit from a Nephilim that were destroyed thousands and thousands of years ago in the flood.
Hmm.
And in order for them to manifest in this dimension, they either do one of two things. We've been talking about Malachi Martin's perfect possession. They have to either have access to a human being, and ancient texts are filled with people being demon-possessed, or... And this is my own kind of pet theory with,
sure.
with what the grays are. Whitley Strieber talks about being on board a ship, and this is after innumerable abductions.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about going in this like a closet or a drawer, and he opens this thing up, and what he sees is he actually looks at the shells of what the grays are. And they're just like almost like suits. The eyes are there, the head, but they're flat. There's nothing there. And when I read that, it finally, for me, it clicked in. What if, we talked about this earlier, what if you're looking at this interdimensional being, you know, Lucifer, Satan, who's really a super scientist? We know today, and I've talked to people at Amgen, which is a genetic, you know, a genetic laboratory, they can take, for instance, the firefly, a gene of a firefly, and put it into a frog, and guess what you get? And this is right from a geneticist telling me this. You get a frog that glows in the dark, literally.
Really?
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that he knows about. So, you know, they have access to the oxyribonucleic acid double helix spiral life, which all building blocks. If we're getting there now, what about a super scientist that's, let's say, could be millions of years old? What is he capable of doing? And if he knows that the demons, the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim, can't manifest without having some sort of a body to do that, so he creates what I believe are the grays. That's why they all look exactly alike. That's the jerky motions. They all seem to...
Robotic, somewhat.
Yeah, very, very robotic. And that's my own theory with it, but it fits, and to me, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, I got to tell you, if all of this is true, if some of it is true, it tells you the state that this planet was in thousands of years ago. And the poor human beings who had to face this, Mike, no wonder they couldn't understand what was happening to them.
Well, what's interesting is there's another ancient scripture. I'm just going to read it real quick. And this to me is chilling because it talks about a time that has not happened yet.
Does it kind of echo this other
one
that you talked about?
Yeah, listen to this. It says, the coming of a lawless one, the Antichrist, will be in accordance with the work of Satan, displayed in all kinds of counterfeit miracles, signs, and wonders, and in every sort of evil that deceives those who are perishing. In other words, when this thing begins to manifest, it's people are going to be blown away. People aren't going to know what they're looking at. They will be deceived. It says all signs, all great signs and lying wonders. And unless a person knows what it is that they're looking at, it has some sort of a litmus test, some sort of an anchor that they can go to and say, well, this, I don't think this is real. I think I'm being deceived here. Unless he has a way of balancing that out and determining whether what he's looking at is malevolent or benevolent, whether it's true or a deception, he will be deceived. For instance, and this, we can get into this maybe now a little bit if you want to, the whole, I believe what happened in Fatima on October 13th, 1917, I believe that the apparition was not what most people think it is.
The apparition, of course, being the Virgin Mary.
Being the Virgin Mary. Now, with all due respect to Catholics, I'm not you know, slamming in the Catholic Church. It's not my intent here. What my intent is to say that what if what we were looking at was part of a deception? Many of the eyewitnesses talk about the miracle of the sun. For those of you who don't know what that is, I'll just give you a thumbnail sketch.
An incredible story.
Thumbnail sketch, you had these three children who had claimed to see an apparition of the Virgin Mary. Of course, no one believed them at first, and they asked for a sign. And the only people who could see the Virgin Mary were the three children. So the alleged figure of the Virgin Mary, we'll call her the Virgin Mary, but this entity, whatever this entity was, says that on October 13th, I will appear and I'll give them all a sign. You had about 70,000 people gather in Fatima, Portugal. The weather conditions were abysmal. It rained all morning. You had a cross section of people. You had clergy. You had newspaper men. You had photographers. You had peasants. You had the professional people, mm-hmm. doctors.
Again, this is 1917.
1917, a complete cross section of humanity. It had been raining for hours. People were drenched. Nothing had happened. The apparition was an hour late. I write about this in detail in the book, The Revealing, which is the third book of the trilogy. And getting back to the story, at around 1 o'clock, the people began to see something. And what they saw, the eyewitnesses all, not all of them, but many of them say that when the clouds parted, what they saw was a silver disc. Now, this is years before what we would know, there was no term UFO. Back in 1917. It wasn't part of the culture. We hadn't seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right. And they described it as the sun coming down.
Exactly. But what's interesting to me, and I've done a little bit of research into this, actually fairly extensively, and what I have been able to discover, there are pictures of the children, there are pictures of the crowd, there are pictures of the crowd looking up.
Real pictures.
Real pictures. There's pictures of everything but the spinning disc. Or the spinning sun, and I believe that those pictures were confiscated. I believe, that's the conspiratologist in me coming out. But I believe that those pictures. I mean, I have talked to priests. I have, done all sorts of research. I have never yet seen a picture from the event showing the spinning disc.
But were there pictures of people like trying to look up or anything like?
There's pictures of the whole crowd looking up at this thing, and what it was, I believe, is a harbinger. I believe it's a precursor of what is about to overtake the planet. Remember the movie Signs, when they turn on the TV and they see, a fleet of ships?
Yes.
And that's, if that happens, let's say there is a war in Israel, which is, we can get into that later too. Let's say this prophecy, ancient prophecy from the scriptures, the Hebrew scriptures, comes true. And we see a flotilla of UFOs over the old city of Jerusalem after some sort of a nuclear
event. Which they didn't know what they were, so they described them as one
sun
again.
Sun disks. Let's say we see that. All bets are off. We've just had a paradigm shift in consciousness. And whatever, everything would stop. But it would be different than it would be pre-War of the Worlds, where, you had this radio broadcast. We're all familiar with what it was. And some people committed suicide because they thought we were being invaded. We have been enculturated in the last 50 years with all the movies, all the television, all the books to, so when this thing happens, when it happens, I'm not saying if it happens, I'm saying when it happens, when the thing actually manifests, people will be still pretty freaked out, but there won't be this mass panic like there would have been 50 years ago. And my point is this, go to a theater sometime get up from what you're watching and just walk to the front and to the left of the theater and look back at the people. I mean, I've done this. It's like brainwashing. It's like mind control. Everyone's sitting with their eyes wide open, staring at the screen and taking in whatever there is that's on the screen. You know, they become part of the fictional dream that they're watching. I mean, it's a great form to communicate,
sure,
you know, with the masses of people and enculturate an entire world.
Well, if the prophecy is correct and we have thousands of sun disks around, why are they coming back? What's going on? What's the reason?
I think, contrary to what Toynbee believes, that civilizations rise and fall and it's cyclical and there's never any end to this thing. Excuse me. I believe that history is on a linear progression headed towards a climax. And I believe that we're in the days, excuse me, I believe we're in the days where we're going to see this climax happen. Now, I'm not a date setter, and I can't put a date on it. But I'll tell you one of the ancient
2012, I'll give you that.
2012, I'm looking hard at that because of the Mayan calendar. I mean, I find that really, really interesting. And, you know, and things are getting, I'm not going to use the word bleak, but let's face it, folks. I mean, look what's happening on the planet.
But they're not coming back to help us, are they?
I don't believe so. I believe it's part of the Great Deception. I believe that it's
the rabbit punch.
Well, it's the rabbit punch to herald this man that Scripture calls the Antichrist into a very prominent position.
Now, would he already have been in that position by the time this all happens?
You know, I don't know that. There's a bunch of different scenarios that way. He could rise to power and then boast of an alien connection when they manifested themselves. He could rise to power with the help of what I want to call alien or extraterrestrial help to do that. They could kind of give him, well, this is the guy. I mean, I'm not sure how it's going to work. I only know...
You know how strange this seems.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely.
But Scripture talks about this time that there will, that this son of perdition, that this man of lawlessness, that this man of sin, the Antichrist against Christ, against the Messiah, will come upon the scene. And it tells us when it will happen. One again, getting back to the Sitchin thing versus what, you know, Sumerian,
right,
versus Hebrew Scripture, you know, Christian Scripture, and why I hang my hat on that is the prophecy. Here's a prophecy that's thousands of years old, and it talks about that in the end days, in the latter days, that Israel, the Jewish people, would be gathered from the four corners of the earth and brought back to their homeland. Now, it's easy for us on this side of 1948, when Israel became a homeland, to say that, well, that's a nice coincidence. It's another thing to realize that any other culture that has been displaced has lost their language and has ceased to become a culture. Usually in two generations, it's gone. It ceases to become a culture. Yet the Jewish people, Israel, has had their religion and their culture intact after the diaspora. And what I mean by that is in AD 70, Titus and his legions, the Roman legions, came into Jerusalem. There was a siege. They razed the city. Over, I think, 1 million inhabitants were slaughtered. The Jewish nation ceased to become a Jewish nation, and it began the beginning of what is the diaspora, where the Jews were scattered all over the earth. And they remained that way for 2,000 years. And if that prophecy wasn't enough, another prophecy, and I get into all this in the Nephilim trilogy, another prophecy says specifically that Jerusalem, would be trodden down by the Gentiles. Now, we all know that a Gentile is anyone who is not a Jew.
Right.
Anyone.
Anybody.
Until the times of the Gentiles are over. Again, you would say, well, gee, that's interesting. And what we see is that Jerusalem was trodden down by the Gentiles for basically 2,000 years until 1965, when the Israelis finally took control of the Temple Mount. And those two prophecies have been fulfilled in our lifetime. I mean, I was born in 1950, so it happened just before my birth. But the bottom line is, we've seen that happen. And that to me starts like if there is a time clock, a doomsday clock, a prophetic clock, I think it starts ticking, because Israel, after 2,000 years of being dispersed on the nations of the earth, are now back in Israel and reestablished as a sovereign nation. And what's incredible, again, it goes back to our analogy of the overseer and the helicopter. And this is why, you know, prophecy has to be 100% accurate 100% of the time. It can't be, you know, 95%. It's got to be 100% accurate. And we see that this thing has been fulfilled to the nines. It's right there. It's 100% accuracy that both of these ancient prophecies have been fulfilled. I'll tell you one that has not been fulfilled. It talks about the city of Damascus, which is one of the oldest cities on the planet, becomes a ruinous heap.
Well, but you never know.
Yeah, I believe this will happen in concordance with the Ezekiel prophecy, which we talked about, with that confederacy of nations coming up against the land of unwalled villages.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in that exchange, Damascus will be hit and will become a wasteland. It's chilling stuff.
It is chilling. It's chilling, and what's so remarkable, again, is to try to tie in what one always thought was spiritual with, and biblical, with flying saucers and craft. I mean, that I'm having a tough time tying together, because there's this part of me that wants to believe they're extraterrestrial, they came from other planets, they confused people on this planet, people thought of them as gods. And they're very, very, physical. And then there's another part of me that says, no, absolutely, they're fallen angels. And what you read in Genesis is absolutely fact. Mm-hmm. And these apocalyptic prophecies will happen. It's the craft that confuses me.
Well, getting back to the craft part, we talked about Satan or Lucifer, this fallen angel. This guy, I believe, is a super scientist. I mean, I believe he is he's twisted. He's absolutely demented, but I believe he's a super scientist.
Like a mad scientist?
Something like that. I mean, he's definitely... Look, I believe that if the fallen angels have rebelled and moved away from the great overseer, God, if they've moved away from him, then they become twisted. They become very malevolent. They lack the peace, and they become the other. They become what Pol Pot is. And they're twisted, and there's a rage that's constantly in there because they know that they will never have peace, and it gnaws at them. I think it gnaws at them. It eats at them, you know, constantly. But I also think that they're not dummies. They're not, you know, people have this idea that somehow demons or fallen angels, you know, are just you know, I'm not sure. A lot of people
spirits,
think that they're, you know, guys in a red suit with horns running around, you know, oh, this is a bunch of nonsense. What ancient scripture says, listen to this, it says, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. I mean, if you were to look at each word and think of what the writer is trying to tell us and how intense the language that he uses, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. I mean, that's intense. I mean, this isn't just a little skirmish. This is a major war that has been going on for eons and continues and will eventually climax with the birth of this Antichrist. And in all three books, it starts off with in Nephilim. And then, of course, with the revealing. But there's this progression where it's beginning to manifest. Things are heating up. And one of the characters, Johanan, realizes that this is it. The time is now. It's not. It's accelerating to the point where he believes it's going to happen very soon.
We'll be back with more. This is amazing. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, tomorrow, first hour on Coast to Coast, I'll be talking with an individual who claims he was abducted. He has graphic pictures that he has painted that shows exactly what life was like for him. So we'll have that, and then we'll go into our full Friday into Saturday night open lines. And then when we get to the top of the hour tonight, of course, we'll have open lines. We'll give you the opportunity to talk with our guests, L.A. Marzulli, right here on Coast to Coast AM. You know, Lynn, considering the state of affairs on this planet of recent, maybe it would be refreshing to have them come down here.
If they were benevolent, I would go for that. But everything I've ever read, especially if you look at the books by I heard the bumper or the advertisement for tomorrow night's guest talking about an
His
abductee,
abduction, yeah.
and I've read The Threat and Secret Life by Dr. Jacobs, and he has a different worldview, let's say, than I do. But he arrives at the same conclusion that he's very afraid. He's very afraid of these guys, and without a covering of some sort. And I believe that there's a way of stopping this thing, which is very similar to an exorcism, but I believe it can be done. I believe that an abductee can get free of it if he wants to.
Why are they waiting for the events to unfold before this return?
Interesting question. Let me say that I believe that there's, again, from the ancient texts, I believe there's a scripture that says that the coming of a lawless one, I'm just paraphrasing here,
Sure, understand.
will be with all great signs and lying wonders, and but he is being restrained until he that is restrains him is taken out of the way. And again, remember we talked about powers and principalities and heavenlies. I believe that this thing is being held back
Somewhere.
exactly,
Yeah.
by a force of let's say benevolent angels
Of good.
of good, and it's being held in check. But at some point in time, that until he is taken out, whatever that force is, whatever those group of people or angels are finally removed. Some people would also say it could be the spirit of the overseer, the spirit of a living God, let's say. Could be the thing that the force, the entity that's holding it in check. But at some point in time, it will be released. It will be allowed to manifest.
On your website, spiralalife.com, you talk a little bit about alien gospel. What is that?
Well, the alien gospel is simply this, that the aliens are our progenitors. They created us. They manipulated us genetically 10, 20, 30,000 years ago.
Do you believe that? I do.
Well, you want, again, if I go back into the prophecy thing, if I believe in that worldview, then I wouldn't believe in the worldview that these ancient scriptures, which have the prophecy to back them up. In other words,
Yeah. All right.
that's why I part company. If
You don't think you can have both?
if the aliens had a bunch of prophecy that had been manifesting for 2,000 or 3,000 years and was manifesting today, and it was 100% accurate, then I would begin to look at that. But they don't. In fact, many of the abductees that get prophecies from these aliens, for lack of a better word, find out most of the time that they're lying to them, and they get to the point where they don't believe anything that they say. In fact, one of my characters in book two, The Unholy Deception, at first she believes that they're benevolent, that they're good, that they're, space brothers, that she's on a mission, that this, which a lot of abductees at first want to believe. Later on, she's terrified, and she realizes that they always lie to her, that everything that they say is a lie. And my research has shown that most abductees, I won't say most, but many begin to realize that there's some sort of head trip going on. There's a lot of games going on where these entities just lie. And so, I mean, I would if they came and they had this whole list of prophetic utterances which were going to happen and they were all becoming true, I would begin to look at that. But the reason why I don't believe that is because, first of all, they don't have the prophecy. Second of all, the ancient scriptures do have the prophecy, and that prophecy is manifesting in our time.
Well, you know what? You could be right. You could be absolutely right. But back to the gospel, alien gospel.
Thank you for pointing me behind.
That's right.
I lost that train of thought.
Well,
there. Thank you. Okay, thank you.
I pushed you the other way anyway.
Okay. So the alien gospel is that there are progenitors, that they created us. Once that happens, the overseer or the God of the Hebrew scriptures and the Christian scriptures becomes null and void. And what this will do is that I believe that the masses, a great mass of people, will believe this lie that the aliens seated us here, they're responsible, and they'll show us who God really is. Ancient scriptures, I'm speaking about Christian scriptures, but they're still 2,000 years old, that's fairly ancient in my book, speaks of this one world religion which is set up. And when you look at the fanaticism of the Islamic world, you'd say to yourself, how's that ever going to happen? Well, it could happen. I'm not saying this is a scenario, and it's one that I happen to personally believe in. If you had a manifestation like the cover of the third book is, with hundreds of sundays, hundreds of UFOs over Jerusalem, all bets are off, especially when the aliens come out and tell the Islamic world that, you know what, we were the ones that Muhammad saw, and we did this to try to bring everyone together, and we manifested Buddha, and we manifested the Christ, and we manifested Muhammad, and we manifested, you know, Confucius and all this. And that's what I think the alien gospel is going to
say. Well, and you're going to have to believe them only because you're witnessing something.
You're witnessing something that you can't explain.
Exactly.
Or if you know what the ancient scripture says specifically.
Not a lot of people will.
And that's hopefully what part of what I'm doing in my books is to educate people who don't know anything about this so they understand that when this manifests, it will be with all signs and lying wonders so that even the elect would be deceived. That's the high, I'm not making this up. I mean, that's what the scripture says. That's what the ancient texts say, that even the elect would be deceived. All signs, all lying wonders. So whatever this is, it's and I believe it's multifaceted. I believe we're being softened for it, like the rabbit punch you mentioned earlier. I mean, I think we're being softened up for it, and this thing's going to happen. And I believe it's in our lifetime.
When did this click in for you? When did it hit you? When did you realize there's something going on here?
Well, I read a book called The Omega Conspiracy. Actually, he's my mentor in a way. His name is Dr. I.D.E. Thomas. And also another book called Earth's Earliest Ages by Pember. And both of these authors, Pember's book is about 100 years old. And Pember's talking about the return of Israel because he knew what the ancient text says. So this is like in the 19th century, he's talking about the return of Israel. He's talking about the rise of certain occult practices, which we saw manifest. So this guy knew his scripture and knew what was going on. And, after reading this particular book and Dr. Thomas's book about, which talked about the whole UFO thing, and having come from an occult background myself, I was deeply immersed in the occult for about 10 years and realized, I mean, I had spirit guides. I had all sorts of stuff.
I mean, were you going down the wrong path?
Well, that's what I think happened. Sure. Yeah. And when I became a Christian, when I became born again, and on all these terms, people hear them in the media, and no one really knows what it is. I wasn't in a church. I had just read a couple of books about what I thought Christianity was, and I said something really simple. I just said, look, I don't know whether you're even real or not, but if you are, change me, do something, show yourself. And that was the beginning of it, and that's what happened. I mean, it was a real experience. And as I grew and as I started reading ancient texts and getting into it, of course, the whole UFO phenomena was, a friend of mine came up to me and said, look, what about UFOs? What are they? And I didn't have an answer for it, so I began to dig. And along with that was my own encounter that I had at 13. And I'll just, this is actually written in the book Nephilim. It's in book one, and one of the characters who's a bad guy tells the story, but it's verbatim of what happened to me. And I'll just give you a quick thumbnail sketch of it. I was 13 years old. It's 1963. I don't know anything about UFOs other than flying saucers. You know, I've heard the term. And I'm at Boy Scout camp in Rising Sun, Maryland. And I'm walking up this ravine with three other boys. And if they're listening, one of these guys is listening, please contact me because I'd love to talk. And go on the website and contact me. But there's four of us. I'm the last guy in line, and we're walking up a ravine because it's a shortcut to get to lunch because we're hungry. We're 13-year-old kids. And the sky is just a deep blue, not a cloud in it, just a huge canopy over us. And we've got a good shot. Even though we're down in this ravine, we've got a good shot at the sky. And I'm kind of walking, and there's a lot of rocks and stuff, so you got to look at the path. And the lead guy goes, wow, what's that? And the other two boys in front of me go, wow, look at that, look at that. And I go, where? And one of them goes, there. And I look up, and it's the classic silver disc, the classic silver. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Like the size of my pinky nail, and it's just hovering there without a sound. The sun's gleaming off of it. It was just motionless, just sitting there. And when we looked at it, I would say for a good 15 to 20 seconds, it's hard to, but at least 15 seconds, perhaps 20 seconds, and the thing shot up straight in the air and out of sight. Just, I mean, classic. Just, and this is the freaky part. We ran back to the scout camp, burst in on everyone. We saw a flying saucer. We saw a flying saucer. And we were laughed to scorn. I mean, people just, By the evening, the other three boys had recanted the story.
And you're hanging out there all by yourself, huh?
I'm hanging out there, and I refused to recant my story, and I was made fun of and everything else. But what it showed me was that, you know, people will do anything to go along with the herd, to be accepted. And I took the ridicule rather than, you know, be accepted, because this was the truth. This is what I saw. So all those things combined, you know, led me into this, and having been in the occult, led me into a search. What is really going on here? What am I looking at? And from that became the whole idea of this deception, this great deception, which I believe is manifesting now, is beginning to manifest now on the earth.
Well, Jacques Vallée, who used to investigate UFOs, who has given it up. He just doesn't want to touch it anymore.
I don't blame him.
He may be afraid of it, honestly. Wrote a book once called Messengers of Deception. So there are some people out there who would agree with you that there's something very, very wrong here.
You know, I have not read that, but I've read some of his other books, and I know that having delved into it myself, there comes a time, there comes a point where I became very weary of it. This is about 2 years ago. And a friend of mine came up and said, Lynn, you need to get away from it for a while. And I basically dropped all research for a year.
Really?
I didn't keep up with anything. A friend of mine told me today even that there was this woman who was doing a lot of research on it. She's had a mental breakdown. When a person gets into this stuff, I'll go back to that one scripture we talked about, the rulers of the darkness of this age against spiritual hosts of wickedness. You have to know what it is you're dealing with. Malachi Martin, when he talks about perfect possession, he knew what he was dealing with. He knew that he had the authority over what he was dealing with. Many people that get into this stuff aren't armed, don't know how to deal with it, don't know that they don't have the authority to deal with it to begin with. And as you know, my particular worldview and what I believe in, I believe I am covered. I believe I do have the authority over that. But I need to be covered by other people praying for me. There's people praying for me right now, because I know that what I'm talking about is, I believe, is the truth, and I believe that the other camp doesn't want this to come out.
Well, that's true. You open yourself up. I do, too, to a lot of things. And you never know what that very strange other side may want to do.
Yeah, speaking of the very strange other side, I believe that when the Antichrist manifests himself, it's just not, he doesn't pop on the screen and go, or on the scene rather, and go, hi, I'm the Antichrist, and here I am.
No.
I believe that there's a cadre of men and women on this planet right now who are awaiting him, who are deliberately.
Do you think they know who he is?
I think some of them do, yeah. I think he's alive when walking around. I think some of them.
He's here already, you think?
I believe so, yeah. There were people, when Hitler was beginning to manifest. I get into this in the third book, again, the whole Nazi party thing and the occult roots that they had.
Some people thought it was him, didn't they?
Well, they did. I mean, yeah. And there was a cadre of people that, you know, pushed him into this thing. And I believe Hitler was in some very, very serious ways possessed. I mean, very, very serious ways possessed. And people, eyewitnesses to him, you know, talk about, especially at the Nuremberg rallies, he'd be up there and just kind of bumbling.
Well, I got to tell you, he was either very possessed or very mentally unstable, because,
or perhaps a combination.
Or a combination,
yeah.
Because no human being could be that evil without having a push.
Well, there you go. How does a child become the monster that Hitler became? I mean, what is that process? And that, I mean, if people don't believe that there's evil in the world, all they need to do is read, you know, Mein Kampf and read anything
about
it.
Well, and apparently he wasn't that monster until a certain period of his life, right?
Yeah.
Nobody ever would have known.
And it's a progression. There's a book, The Twisted Cross is one. And, of course, Trevor Ravenscroft's, you know, classic, The Spear of Destiny, which talks about the progression that Hitler made as an adept. But, see, that's the whole part of seduction and deception, that people get into these things, or they begin to look into what they believe, or they're not sure. Let me put it this way. They begin to delve into occult practices, not knowing what they are. They see power there that's not manifested anywhere else, and they're drawn to that power. And over a period of time, they become adepts of that power. And after a period of time, as Malachi Martin says, perfect possession can take over.
You know what? He may have somehow, Hitler may have opened up some kind of portal, and they took over.
Well, that's certainly what I believe. I discussed that in great length in book three of the trilogy. That is precisely what I believe happened. And we mentioned at the first hour, we just kind of glossed over it. I believe that the Holocaust was, obviously it was deliberate. I mean, we all know that from looking at the records that, I mean.
Well, you know what's so ludicrous, though, Lynn? There are some people on this planet who still don't even believe it happened.
And all you have to do is go to Auschwitz, and, you know, there it is.
Exactly.
I've actually interviewed several Holocaust victims. I've had the privilege of doing that, and they opened themselves up to me and
sure.
told me. The one was at Bergen-Belsen, the other one was at Auschwitz.
But how it could be a secret for so long, it boggles my mind.
Yeah, well, that's, you know. But with the concentration camps and, you know, that whole idea of evil being manifested into the world, I believe it was a Luciferian sacrifice that happened. I believe that the 6 million, Holocaust means as on a burnt altar. I believe literally it was a Luciferic sacrifice. I believe it was Hitler knew exactly what he was trying to do. He knew exactly it was methodical. It was deliberate. It wasn't. It was not only to wipe out the Jews.
It was a cult.
It was definitely a cult. But realizing that if he could exterminate every Jew, then he could, if he knew his prophecy, and I believe he did. I believe he was very savvy that way. Then if Israel would never reestablish the Milan, he could stop prophecy.
That's interesting. And maybe Saddam Hussein might have been the same?
Well, what I believe in Iraq is, Iraq in Iraq is the city of Babylon. Babylon's an ancient city. Babylon is a stronghold. At one time, it's actually talked in the ancient scriptures as the seat of Satan. That power, I'll tell you another a little quick story. There's a guy, his name is Daniel, and he's in Babylon. And he's praying to the overseer that, you know, he's petitioning the overseer to, you know, to act on behalf of Israel, because Israel's been taken captive from Israel, and they're in Babylon. The temple lays in ruin.
Yeah.
This happened about 2,500 years ago. And he prays, and after 28 days, this angel appears to him out of the blue. And he says, oh, Daniel, you're blessed of all men. And it took me 28, listen to this, it took me 28 days to get here because I was opposed by the prince of Persia. And I couldn't get through, so I had to go back for help, and I finally made it through.
That's weird.
And it's spooky, and this is all in the ancient text. It's right there. You can read it for yourself. And the story is just, I mean, it makes the hair on your back of your neck stand up. What people don't realize is Babylon, that spirit, that dominion, that principality that we talked about earlier, is still in control of the region. It's never left. Now think of this. This, I hope, will blow some people's minds. You look at Abu Ghraib.
Yes.
You know what Abu Ghraib is? Abu Ghraib is an atrocity, but guess who's really behind it? You got a bunch of Elmer Fudd soldiers who don't know beans about what they're getting into, and they're in a place of such spiritual darkness. Look at the pictures that came out. Remember the one that, when I first looked at the pictures, I went, oh, my God.
Yeah, it looks like the Black Mass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you go, what's going on here? And I believe, because it was, I believe, you know, Hussein was possessed on some level for sure.
And now, and very quickly, because I want to be able to save you the grief. When you say Elmer Fudd soldiers, you're talking about those convicted.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
I understand.
I mean, I don't mean any disrespect to our armed forces. I hope that's not.
No, I understand. I just want to make sure everybody understands.
What I mean is, people come in there and they don't know what they're dealing with, and the guys that did it were kind of like Elmer Fudds. I mean, they shouldn't have been doing what they were doing.
Right.
Let's face it.
Stay with us. Questions to come on Coast to Coast AM.